अस्सोहं मत्सुकुन्तया प्रभस्पिश शिशुयो प्रणवसर्वेदेषु शब्दके पुरुषं नृषु। O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and the ability in man. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This verse explains how the Lord is all-pervasive by His diverse material and spiritual energies. The Supreme Lord can be preliminarily perceived by His different energies, and in this way He is realized impersonally. As the demigod in the sun is a person and is perceived by His all-pervading energy, the sunshine, so the Lord, although in His eternal abode, is perceived by His all-pervading diffusive energies. The taste of water is the active principle of water. No one likes to drink seawater because the pure taste of water is mixed with salt. Attraction for water depends on the purity of the taste, and this pure taste is one of the energies of the Lord. The impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste, and the personalist also glorifies the Lord for His kindly supplying tasty water to quench man's thirst. That is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and personal conception are simultaneously present in everything, and that there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established this sublime doctrine, Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. The light of the sun and the moon is also originally emanating from the Brahma Jyoti, which is the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. And pranava, or the omkar, transcendental sound in the beginning of every Vedic hymn, addresses the Supreme Lord. Because the impersonalists are very much afraid of addressing the Supreme Lord Krishna by His innumerable names, they prefer to vibrate the transcendental sound omkar. But they do not realize that Omkar is the sound representation of Krishna. The jurisdiction of Krishna consciousness extends everywhere, and one who knows Krishna consciousness is blessed. Those who do not know Krishna are an illusion, and so knowledge of Krishna is liberation, and ignorance of Him is bondage. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound in ether and ability in man. I am very grateful to be with all of you today. I am astounded to see how, according to this verse, Lord Krishna has given you such ability to build this temple. I have the ability in man. People all over the world are developing homes, businesses, government buildings, skyscrapers. In one sense, when you go to a big city and you see these massive skyscrapers being built quite rapidly, actually, it's very impressive from one perspective. But that is Krishna's empowerment coming through the agency of the illusory energy, or jak się na prakriti sujete sa čera čera. Krishna tells that I am the source and the ultimate controller of material energy. So people do not know that their power is coming from Krishna, from the Supreme Lord. But it is coming through the agency of the illusory energy. The difference between spiritual life and material life is recognition and appreciation. A devotee recognizes that my intelligence, my abilities, all resources, everything is a blessing, the gift of Krishna. And we appreciate that gift by reciprocating. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachati. We reciprocate by utilizing these gifts that Krishna gives us as an offering of love. Prabhupada gave a nice example of how a devotee will take water from the Ganges and then with prayers of devotion offer it to the Ganges. Now for a person who is scientifically analyzing what's going on from a material perspective, it doesn't really make much sense. You're taking the water from the Ganges and you're offering it to the Ganges. Harivilas Prabhu ki jai. Please excuse me, but I want to do this. This example of Srila Prabhupada for a materially oriented man or woman with scientific research, they would think, what is the uselessness? You're taking water from Ganga and offering it back to the Ganges? The Ganges needs your water. Taking it and giving back, taking one handful out of unlimited gallons. But if it is offered with devotion, Mother Ganges will accept that handful of water as something more precious than the whole rest of the river. Because it's an act of love. Just like a little child of a parent. A baby is really doing nothing for the child. The parent is supplying everything. Supplying the food, supplying the protection, supplying the clothes, supplying everything. But if the child simply appreciates it and wants to just smile and show some love to the parents, is there anything more blissful to the parents than that? So Krishna is the supreme Ambija Pratapita. He is the supreme mother, the supreme father of all living beings. He simply wants reciprocation. He's giving everything. And the most glorious of all secrets is how the Lord, He is conquered by a devotee who just offers what He has given us back to Him with a sincere feeling of devotion. So in this sense, what is the difference between the massive skyscrapers being built in cities all over the world and the magnificent mansions that people are building? Of course, these days they're not building them so much. And this temple, from the perspective of the price, this is not all that costly in comparison. As far as the speed in which it was built, from a devotee's perspective, amazing. I've never seen anything like it. When you go to the cities, how fast they build those massive buildings. They're also really fast. The miracle and the glory of this temple is not so much in the speed it was built or the materials it was used, which is all wonderful, but in its purpose. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purpose, in one purport, that Krishna does not accept the thing that you offer. Krishna accepts the purpose, the intention in which it is offered. This temple is volunteers who have sacrificed so much of their life, taken so much risk as an offering of love to Krishna. And therefore, it is a miracle. Bhakti is a miracle. It's not the physical. Actually, everything is a miracle if we see it in relation to Krishna. But it is that love, that devotion, that reciprocation which went into it, that is the real miracle. That separates it from most other structures, buildings, or efforts in the world today. It is a place that has been created so that Sri Sri Radha and Krishna can manifest their love to the whole world. You know, it's last year when I was visiting all of you, Radha and Krishna were in a nice little warehouse. It's quite intimate. It's a temporary place. And it was not even a year ago, yes. And this site here was just some rebarbed steel and a little bit of concrete underground. And here I am, not even a year later, seeing one of the most magnificent temples in all of the Western world.
Haribol.
Spacious, efficient, beautiful. And Krishna has taken his place to bless us and to bless the world. In the history of Vaishnavism, we read about the importance of temples. In one sense, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written that the heart is a temple, because the temple is the place of the residence of the Lord, where the Lord is worshipped. Krishna Sarvasya Chaham Hridishari Krishna Matasutir Pyanam Mohanam. Krishna is seated in every heart. Therefore, the heart is a temple of the Lord. And when we worship the Lord there in our heart, truly our heart is acting as a temple. Krishna reveals himself within the temple of the heart according to our devotion. But because the nature of life in this material existence is that the mind and senses are so much drawn to the external world, Krishna has directed the great acharyas to build temples that we can see, that we can feel, to help us, to prepare us to worship the Lord in the temple of our hearts. And therefore we find within our histories that great souls have spent so much energy to develop temples. The Sri Sampradaya, Sri Pada Ramanujacharya, and his predecessors, Yamunacharya, and others,
how they had developed the temple of Sri Gangam to Ranganath, Rangakshetra. Magnificent temple, one of the largest temples in all of Asia. I think it has 21 gates. And this fantastic arrangements every day, and this has been going on for thousands of years. The deities, they collect water on elephants from the Kaveri River, and they bring it back with musicians playing horns and ladies carrying brass pots on their heads and Brahmins chanting mantras. And everyone gathers to wake the deities, use that water to bathe them every day. Millions of people come. Sri Ramanujacharya also helped to establish the greatness of Tirupati. More people go to that temple than any temple on the planet. And it's not in a city. It's far from everything. Yes? Very far. You have to travel from a completely isolated place, hours and hours and hours from the nearest city. Then you have to cross over 7 hills, and then you have to stand in line. Unless you give some special donations, you have to sometimes stand in line for 20, 24 hours to get about 3 second darshan. Madhvacharya, he established the temple of Udupi Krishna. And how he trained his sannyasis to worship the deity there. Exactly according to Madhvacharya's prescription, how he worshipped the deity still today, 750 years later, the deity is worshipped just that way. By a line of sannyasis he has established. And then even Sri Panchakarma established the worship in Badrinath. Other places still going on. And in our own parampara, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every day, early in the morning, he would go to the temple of Jagannath to have the darshan, to chant, to dance before Lord Jagannath, to worship Lord Jagannath. Just to show by his personal example, who is Lord Chaitanya? He is Krishna, who has come to teach us how to worship Krishna, how to love Krishna. And how much the temple of the deity of Lord Krishna was a central focus for the congregation of devotees. Even Haridas Thakur, he was the Namacharya, who would chant 300,000 names of Krishna every day. Previously, he was living in caves in Benapole, cave in Shantipur, just chanting. He was worshipping Krishna in the temple of his heart by chanting the holy names. But when he came to Puri to spend the rest of his life in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he stayed just outside Jagannath's temple, where he worshipped the chakra and the dome. And every day, Lord, he wasn't allowed in the temple for various social reasons, which we don't agree with, but he was humble and he accepted it. And Srila Prabhupada explained that he was too humble to go in the temple, but he was outside the temple, worshipping the Lord in his form of his chakra and in the form of his holy name. And the same Jagannath, the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would come out of the temple every day carrying his own Mahaprasad to give Haridas Thakur not only the darshan but the Mahaprasad. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would spend hours with Haridas Thakur every day, every morning. That is the reciprocation of love between the Lord and his devotee. So temple worship was very prominent with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he saw Jagannath. He saw the Krishna of Vrindavan as the deity. There is no difference. Our acharyas have emphasized that it is not that the deity represents Krishna. It is not simply that the deity helps us focus on Krishna. That is also there. But the deity is Krishna. By Krishna's inconceivable transcendental potency, he appears within the deity. He is the deity. That body becomes the Satchidananda form of the Lord. One may ask, how is that possible? If God cannot be seen, how can we see him? Out of his mercy, God makes himself visible to us to develop our love. But Premantina Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, although Krishna is 100% manifest in the form of the Archa Murti, the deity, he reveals himself in relation to Ashutosh so that we can see him. We read in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be seeing Jagannath, and he was not seeing what we see. He was seeing Krishna playing his flute. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would fall unconscious. He had to go way back at the Garuda Stampa behind the Jagan Mohan, the whole Kirtan and Darshan hall. Because he would be in such ecstasy in seeing Lord Jagannath. That's what his associate is. It was a place where the devotees could gather together to inspire one another to love Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with all of his devotees, they would have kirtans, they would have darshans, they would have Krishna katam in the temple of Krishna. It's a transcendental community center focused on hearing and chanting and serving the Lord. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave order to Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, six Goswamis of Vrindavan, that my mother wants me to stay in Puri. I want you to go to Vrindavan and establish the pure principles of bhakti by your own example, by the lives that you live. And I want you to write literatures which will extract from the essence of Vedic knowledge, logically, philosophically, and full of love, that the ultimate goal, the conclusion, is pure, unmotivated loving service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And I want you to excavate the holy places in Vrindavan so people can come there on pilgrimage to become spiritually inspired. And I want you to build temples and install deities and establish them as education centers, cultural centers, community centers, where people can come together, associate with devotees, and hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And how much energy the Goswamis and their disciples made. Follow this instruction. Many of you have been to Vrindavan. You have seen Radha Govinda Temple. Can you imagine what it's like to build that? You have experienced the pressures and the anxieties, which are very healthy for us to assume for Krishna service, to build this beautiful temple. Can you imagine what it took to build Radha Govinda Temple? They don't have the modern machinery we have today, or the excavators. Yes. It's on a hill. To level it was all by hand, with picks and shovels. build a foundation that was going to hold a 7-story solid stone building. It's solid stone inside and out. There's no steel. They didn't have steel in those days. They didn't have beams like we know it. It was just massive solid stone blocks. Even today, in many parts of India, in Bombay, we see they're building skyscrapers. They use machines sometimes, but most of the time you see they just build scaffolding out of bamboo poles. They just have a bucket with a pulley and a rope, and they just, you know, let it go down, and then they pull it up to bring the cement up, and then they go. Can you imagine how they were building in those days? To get massive blocks of solid sandstone, 7 stories up. Rupa Goswami's followers, they went through that effort to build Radha Govinda Temple. And the finest artisans, they were carving each piece. And Madan Mohan Temple. Sanatana Goswami had Madan Mohan under a tree. Srila Prabhupada says sometimes he just had a little swing on a tree and had Madan Mohan there for years. And he worshipped because he had nothing. Sanatana Goswami was a billionaire, gave everything away, came to Vrindavan. Then the deity appeared to him, and he had nothing. He already gave everything away. He had nothing. Then that Mr. Kapoor came, a merchant with a boat selling salt. And Sanatana Goswami helped him out of a major crisis. He said, I want to give you everything I have. Sanatana Goswami says, I don't need anything. But Madan Mohan should be under a tree built in a temple. This was his devotion. Govindaji Temple was being built. Rupa Goswami still slept under a different tree every night. Madan Mohan Temple was built. And Sanatana Goswami never even stayed in it. He was still under a different tree every night. But the deity was there. And today, and over the centuries, over the past 4.5 centuries, millions and millions of people have gone there. When we read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains what it was like when he first came to Vrindavan. And in Bhakti Ratnakar, we find out what it was like generations after, when Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur were coming to Vrindavan. Everything was focused around these temples. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes about the pujaris of Madan Mohan Temple and the pujaris of Radha Govinda Temple, and how all the devotees would be gathering there and doing kirtan there and doing harikatha there and worshipping the Lord there. It's absolutely fantastic. When Srinivasacharya came, the next generation, he came to Radha Govinda Temple. Jiva Goswami and all the devotees would go there and meet every day. Have darshan of the Lord, have harikatha, have harikirtan. Some people who are not so intelligent, they say the temples are for the neophyte devotees. That's true. Srila Prabhupada explained that temples are very necessary for the neophyte devotees. Because they give a place of focus. In one place, Srila Prabhupada wrote, the purpose of all of our temples is simply to give people the opportunity to associate with devotees. But yes, it is very important for neophyte devotees. But we find that the most exalted, advanced devotees are even more enthusiastic about going to the temples. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not a neophyte.
was at the temple of Jagannath every single morning, without fail. And Rupan Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath, they were not Das Goswami, they were not neophytes, Jiva Goswami. They were the most exalted of all Vaishnavas. But they each had their own temples and worshiped there and invited people to come and join them there. This is a very beautiful part of our culture. And Srila Prabhupada, his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Prabhupada, gave him the order to establish Krishna consciousness, Lord Chaitanya's message, all over the world. And Prabhupada took that order as his life and soul. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati himself, his guru, he wrote literatures following in the footsteps of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. He used the printing press and called it the Brihat Mridanga, the big Mridanga. He said, with our Mridanga drum, the holy name could be heard within a vicinity of maybe a block or two of that drum. But with this press, we can have kirtan, a kirtan that glorifies the holy name that will be heard throughout the entire world. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he built temples. At the beginning, they started with in Calcutta and on Uttadonga Junction Road. An old house, and they used it as the first Gaudiya. And gradually they took possession of some land in Mayapur to create the sheep, the Chaitanya Math. And then one devotee, a merchant, he was a businessman, and he was a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And he wanted to help his Guru Maharaj. His guru said, I want to build a beautiful temple in Calcutta. That man gave all of his wealth. He became a disciple, an initiated disciple. He gave everything he had, his entire savings, to build that temple. He was actively involved in managing the construction, exactly as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur wanted it. It's a marble temple in Balak Bazaar. Many of you have been there. Balak Bazaar, Gaudiya Math. That Vaishnava, to serve his guru, gave everything. He was a very wealthy man. By the time the temple was finished, he had nothing left. He gave it all to his guru. He didn't want to control it. He had absolutely no ownership of it. He just gave it unconditionally. And after it was done, he had to sell his home. Can you imagine the devotion of this one man? He not only gave everything in his bank account, he not only gave everything in his business, he sold his own home to get more money to build that temple. And in the end, he very humbly asked the devotees, you know, if he could have one little small room to stay, because he was, otherwise he was on the street. And he was there just like a sailite, one little room, absolutely no false ego, just wanted to serve. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was so pleased with him. He would oftentimes glorify his devotee in his lectures. Even to sannyasis, which he had many, what kind of renunciation, what kind of devotion did this man give everything to serve the Vaishnavas and to serve the world by building a beautiful temple? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur himself, he was in Puri, holy place. when he saw that he was going to soon leave this world. He could have stayed in Puri to leave one's body in a holy place considered supreme success in life. Or he could have gone back to Mayapur, Dad. But where did he go? He went to Calcutta. The most corrupt, the most dirty of all materialistic places in Bengal is Calcutta. Yes. Gorky sure does bother you when I go to Calcutta. He said it's the kingdom of Maya. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur built that temple in Calcutta, and he went to Bhakt Bazar Gaudiamath, the temple in Calcutta, and that's where he performed his last pastime of giving up his life. That was a statement there. That wherever the temple is, it is Vaikuntha. Yes, Srila Prabhupada, he took the spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and his own Gurudev to his heart of hearts and developed temples all over the world. And devotees, at the beginning days, they had very little, oftentimes nothing. They would go to foreign lands where a devotee had never touched a family history. They'd go there and start a temple. And in every one of those temples, they were flourishing. Because in that temple was the worship of the Lord, the association of devotees, the chanting of the holy names, Krishna Katha, and Prasad. Very simple. Prabhupada's formula was so simple. It was this formula of Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya. Just inspire people to chant Hare Krishna. Hear about Krishna, read these books, give Prasad. Develop this devotional service attitude through these means. Srila Prabhupada said that anyone who thinks that they can become Krishna conscious without the association of devotees is insane. Very strong word. We need the association of devotees. Even advanced people need association of devotees to sustain their Krishna consciousness in this world. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bharat Maharaj, he was on the stage of Baba. Very advanced. He was up there on the Gandaki River in the Himalayas, meditating on Krishna. He would be weeping in ecstasy. He was alone. He got, Maya knows right where to get people. He sent a little deer that was dying, drowning in the water. The mother had just died in Mara. Had to save the deer. He was compassionate. Then he had to raise the deer. He had to be the mother, the father, the sister, the brother. And eventually, he became materially attached to the deer. Now, if he had any godbrothers or godsisters there, they would have said, for Bharatprabhu, you're too attached. How can you say that? Whoever we are, we need association of devotees. It's very important. The Prabhupada has created these temples as a place where we can associate with the devotees. They are fortresses that give us spiritual protection. They're very important. They're necessary. Sometimes Prabhupada said, if all our temples were taken away, we could still all go back to Godhead just by associating with devotees and chanting the holy names. But still, he put so much energy to build these temples. Devotees like Hari Vilas Prabhu went to Paris, yes,
not an easy place to be Krishna conscious. Paris is not known for ascetics. It's not a Tapabhumi place of renunciation. It's a place of fashion and sex life and sense gratification. It's one of the topmost places on the planet, famous for a very high, sophisticated level of material enjoyment. Yes. It's like for sense gratifiers, it's a very, very holy place. You know, London is a lot. They have but people from London, they all go to Paris where they really want to enjoy. New York, Berlin, Paris is the place. So right in the very heart of Maya, and you know, the best sense gratifying fashion and perfume places on Fifth Avenue are all embassies of Paris in New York City. Very powerful place. And Hari Balasru, who's president of a temple in Paris. Unbelievable. An embassy of the spiritual world. He was the ambassador. It's such a place. And people were coming. People were being transformed. People's lives were changing. Millions of books being distributed there. It's unbelievable how it's just developing. So yes, Hari Balasprabhu has realization of what Prabhupada wants. He's not just theoretically doing something on his own. He has deep realization, but it's from his own experience and sacrifice of living in Prabhupada's footsteps. And if it's that inspiration that is the real foundation of this temple. The foundation of this temple is not steel and cement. The foundation of this temple is Hari Balasprabhu's deep love for Srila Prabhupada, Krishna, and his very, very serious commitment to be an instrument of Prabhupada's mercy. And how Srila Prabhupada struggled for temples. 26 Second Avenue was the first one. And it wasn't easy. Mukunda Maharaj, Janaki Devi, Prabhu, and some others, and they arranged for the first month of Prabhupada's rent. But they said, we may not be able to help you after this, because they didn't have anything either. Prabhupada took the risk. And he sent them to start a temple in San Francisco, on Frederick Street. They had nothing, somehow or other. They just went out and raised funds. That mantra rock dance that Shyam Sundar, Mukunda, Maharaj, and all the others, Guru Das Prabhu, that was for the purpose of getting donations to pay the rent. They did nothing. Malati Prabhu sometimes tells the story of how one time, one month, they had nothing. They just had no money. There was no, and the rent was overdue. And they had no means to make money. They didn't know what to do. It was really a desperate situation. Walking down the street, and she saw $100 bills flying in the wind on the sidewalk. And they dashed her. And she just, they ran and they collected on it. It was just enough to pay the rent. It wasn't easy. But they knew how much more they wanted these temples. And they got a bowling alley in Montreal. Can you imagine converting a bowling alley into a temple? There's no walls. I was never there. It was before that they just put ropes from wall to wall and then hung sheets. And that's how they, that was the divisions. Brahmacharya ashram was on one side of the sheets, the Brahmacharya ashram was on the other side. Kitchi was on another sheet. It's, you know, there's not many walls in a bowling alley. You can't construct them. They had no money. And eventually Prabhupada got that beautiful skyscraper in New York City. Oh, he was so proud of that. It was on 55th Street. Prabhupada was so happy to have that temple. Thousands of people were coming. Hundreds of devotees were living there. They had an auditorium, and they had dramas every Sunday with the Vaikuntha players, beautiful temple room and restaurant, cultural center, Prabhupada's lectures. Devotees would go out and do Harinam Kirtan, would distribute books in the center. And Prabhupada, just to express how much he was pleased with the devotees to have that place, he said, when I leave this world, you can put my samadhi on the roof of this temple. And he's so pleased. The heart of Manhattan Island. And in Juhu, Bombay, he wanted to build a temple there, magnificent temple, best temple in all of Maharashtra, marble temple. And years of struggle, intrigue. His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj someday, hopefully will write his book about, it will be an entire book just about what it took to build that temple. That sweet, humble sadhu that was on the Jaladuta just praying to be a puppet of Krishna's mercy, who identified himself as an insignificant beggar. For you and me, he entered into the mood of Arjuna to build that temple. He single-handedly fought against the entire city of Bombay, the politicians, the land mafias, a wealthy man who was the previous sheriff of Bombay and owner of a newspaper was trying to cheat him. Prabhupada stood up. Even all the devotees there, they thought it was hopeless. So hopeless that they actually signed back to the man at a certain point, because their own lawyers were saying, you can't win this case. His lawyers, their lawyers, they signed it back. And Prabhupada came, no. And he got, somehow or other, even though the man was totally obsessed with getting it back from Prabhupada, he got that man to sign it back. Prabhupada fought for years. They started construction, the municipality came and started breaking it all down and dragging the devotees off to prison. Prabhupada fought. Wanted that temple. Years of fighting. Years. I remember in 1974 when Srila Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan. He was getting constant telegrams from Giriraj Swami Maharaj and others from Bombay. And Prabhupada was, his body was in New Vrindavan, but his mind was in Bombay fighting for that temple. And it wasn't much easier in Mayapur or Vrindavan. They were all battles against so much opposition. Prabhupada wanted this temple of the Vedic planetarium in Radhamadava's temple. Magnificent temple that would attract the whole world to Sri Mayapurta. Why? Because he was following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Srila Prabhupada, he would just have a little room somewhere. He was always traveling. He wanted these temples for the devotees and for the population of the world. So it is our heritage, it's our legacy, so much. And it is that commitment, that realization to being puppets of Srila Prabhupada, his compassion, Arivalas Prabhu, and all of you who are assisting him, it is your commitment to be the dancing puppets of Srila Prabhupada that is the foundation of this temple. That is in every brick of this temple. It is what this temple is made of. And I pray from my heart of hearts that the purpose of this temple is served so nicely. Just avoid all politics. Srila Prabhupada needs to quote Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. That one disciple gave everything to build that temple for his Guru Maharaj. His Guru Maharaj designed it, everything. Designed the domes, designed the rooms, designed the altar, designed everything. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so proud that temple was built. And millions of people from all over Bengal are coming to that temple to hear him speak. And to hear the holy name and to take prasad. And so many people, their lives were transformed by associating with the devotees in that temple. Learning what is bhakti. And then devotees started fighting. Fighting over positions. And fighting over places of control within the temple. And at Ratakund, Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told Srila Prabhupada, now so much politics and fighting in the temple. Better we take off the marble and sell it and print and distribute books. Of course, he didn't do that. But that he said that was very powerful. It hurt him so much. So, please, avoid all politics. The only way to avoid politics is through Nada Pisunichina, through Nivasiyashuna. Manina Manatena Kirtaniya Sadahari. We have to be humble and tolerant and forgiving. Politics come when we want position, when we want control. Position and control are necessary for some people for the purpose of service. We shouldn't want the position and control for ourselves. In any situation, we just want to serve. That one disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he built the entire temple, he funded the temple, and the only position he wanted was just to sweep and to serve all the rest of the Vaishnavas. Amazing. We don't want prestige. We don't want... We'll take position because someone needs to do it, if we're asked to do it, only for the purpose of serving. When King Prataparudra, because he had such a big, powerful, controlling position as king, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wouldn't meet him. I will never meet a king. King means controller. Too much ego. Prataparudra said, then I'll give up my kingdom. I'll become a beggar if that's what it takes. The devotee said, no, no, you're doing good service as a king. Just stay as a king. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him sweeping the street, see, the Lord doesn't see the broom in his hand. He sees the heart. The Lord sees from inside out. It's scary, actually. He doesn't just see what you do. Everyone else sees what you do. Everyone else says, Jai, Jai, just see how advanced he is. But Krishna's seeing why you're doing it. From within. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't just see Prataparuja sweeping the street. He saw that from his heart of hearts, he really had that humble service attitude to just be the sweeper. And that was the mood in which he was ruling the kingdom, just as the servant of the servant of the servant. Then you can be a king. Yudhisthira was a king who was in the mood of servant of the servant of the servant. And Duryodhana was a king who wanted a position. Who do we want to be like? We know the stories. Yudhisthira loved Krishna. Duryodhana loved himself. His false self. So what makes a temple effulgent? Really effulgent. Effulgent in a way that would transform people's hearts. It's not in the glass, in the concrete, in the steel, in the decorations. It's in the attitude of the Vaishnavas inside of it. It's that attitude of being the servant of the servant of the servant. And in that spirit, becoming deeply attached to chanting the holy names, individually and together. Deeply attached to speaking and hearing about Krishna individually and together. Deeply attached to distributing this message to others by our life. And what I have seen was very interesting. It's very, very fascinating. I think it's getting late. Should I talk about this fascinating thing another time?
No.
It's 9 o'clock now. But most people actually come to religious movements, especially convert to religious movements, because of the social atmosphere. Philosophy usually is really understood after you join, for most people. I've seen sociological studies, even Hare Krishna. Most people, when these sociologists asked, I saw this book, why did you join the movement? They said, help the philosophy. But then when they actually studied that person, they didn't even know the philosophy really until after they joined. And all the other movements also. The main reason people would come is because I would rather be with these people than everybody else. So if we create a family environment based on love and trust for each other and service, servant of the servant of the servant, that would be all attractive. And when people come to this magnificent, beautiful temple and feel that social environment based on bhakti, their hearts transform. When Americans come and see the beauties, they really don't know what they're seeing. And unfortunately, 98% of Indians that come to see the beauties, they really don't know what they're seeing either. Is it just one of the gods, and you know, give me this, give me that? Even in India, without acharyas, giving people a proper conception of what the deity is, people don't really know what it is or how to approach it. So people will see this beautiful, happy pink temple. And they'll come and see the beauty of the deities. But will they really understand? Just by seeing this temple, they're going to become purified because it's Krishna's temple. But for that transformation to take place in their heart, once they're attracted by the beauty of the temple and the beauty of the deities, what's going to really transform their hearts is the association with the devotees. They see a very loving, service-oriented, humble family of Vaishnavas who are united
to be instruments of compassion to the Lord for others, that will have a major impact. It will transform people's hearts. And that's the substance of why I build these temples, to give us a chance to perform that service. And that's what it took to build this temple. It took unity, it took sacrifice for a higher purpose. And that's what it's going to take to fulfill the mission of this wonderful temple. It's Prabhupada's temple. It's a huge responsibility. And Prabhupada said, you make advancement by how you take responsibility. To the degree we actually participate in the burden of the love of this temple, we're going to make spiritual advancement. It's a burden of love. It was much easier to have just that little hut that you used to have here. Now there's going to be more expenses, there's going to be more management, there's going to be more duty services, there's going to be more everything. It's a burden. But it gives a chance for more people to make advancement by accepting that burden. There's that famous inauguration speech of President Kennedy, where he said, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. If you transfer that to Krishna or the temple, that's pure devotional service. It's wonderful. It's truly wonderful. So yes, take on the burden, participate, make spiritual progress, and create this service-oriented society. And this temple is here to facilitate that. And as Srila Prabhupada would say, it's an opportunity to perfect our lives. It is a blessing. The verse we're reading today is, O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable home in the Vedic mantras. I am the sound and ether and the ability in man. Krishna has provided for us. And you have all worked so hard to make it happen. Krishna is reciprocating your love. And I am deeply inspired, very profoundly grateful to Shripad Hari Balas Prabhu and to all of you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki.